So, deserving listeners, as I've talked about before in previous episodes, my malpractice insurance, it sends me case examples of situations in which a therapist gets sued successfully by their clients or someone else. Whenever I see these emails, I always read them. There's so much that can be learned from what is in these case examples. You not only learn about the law, of course, but you learn about ethical codes. You also learn how these laws are applied, which is actually not always intuitive and doesn't always match up with the common understandings within our field. Judges and lawyers and juries, they don't always agree with the way that us therapists, us counselors see things, and they sometimes make very weird decisions. So these case examples show us how these people apply the law to our field, because the law is applied to us from people outside of the field. It's important that we understand this stuff so we can avoid getting in trouble and we can avoid getting sued, or we can avoid losing our license, or we can avoid sleepless nights where we're like on, you know, we're teetering on our, you know, losing our profession, our livelihood. Another reason why I love these case examples is because of Schadenfreude. I get a little bit of pleasure reading about these, reading about the misfortune of other people, particularly when the therapist is clearly acting unethically, aka stupidly. Bob is with me on the podcast. Does that make me a bad person?
No. We find amusement where we find amusement, right?
Yeah. You know, it's like the pratfall of the counseling business, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you're watching and someone falls over and they're okay and you sort of laugh and, you know, it's all about that. Well, that's what I want to talk about today. We're going to talk about a case example in which a therapist was successfully sued for doing something that therapists actually commonly do. I can't tell you how many times I have had to redirect a supervisee away from the cliff that this counselor fell off of. I'm actually currently working with a new supervisee who is totally headed toward this cliff. Her first supervisor apparently didn't care or didn't know that she was heading toward this cliff, and the supervisee reached out to me for help because she was freaking out, and I've been working with her almost on a daily basis trying to get her from not falling off this cliff because of just her ignorance, her supervisor's ignorance, and, you know, just common misunderstandings that led her to, you know, very close to a cliff with a number of different clients. And so I'm working with her, picking up the pieces, trying to wrap everything up, and hopefully she can, you know, get out of this. I think things will be fine, but so you can't even necessarily depend on your supervisors to help you with this.
As you well know.
Yeah. Bob has said that because, actually, let me thank Bob publicly here. I have, as everyone knows, been working on a book on supervision, and Bob is a legit writer, and so he has reviewed my book twice now. Twice?
No, just the once.
Oh, just once. Okay. And provided comment after comment, which is helpful, you know. You know, when you're reviewing, you're laughing and you're looking at me like you feel guilty or something, but I think I've told you this before off the air, but I don't have much of an ego when it comes to writing. I don't consider myself to be a good writer. And so when editors that are actual good writers provide feedback, I'm more just kind of curious about, like, oh, that's interesting that's how it comes across, you know, because you just never know how your writing is going to come across to someone. It makes sense in your head, but how does it come across? That's the important thing. You know, it doesn't matter how it rattles around in your mind. It matters what is the reaction in another human being. That's the key. And so to get that feedback is like, oh, okay, well, that's good to know. You know, I should know that detail because that's not what I'm trying to say. Or, you know, so, and I don't have any ego about, it's not like I finished the, you know, because this is like, I don't know, the 50th version of this book, the draft. It's not like I finished it and went like, yeah, I knocked it out of the park. That's a home run. So, you know, I, at best, it's like, you know, a check swing or something if we're going to use the baseball metaphor. And so opposed to. So thank you so much, Bob, sure. for providing all that feedback. It'll definitely, absolutely make it a better product. And all the other people, incidentally, a number of you patrons have actually provided feedback that has also been extremely helpful, namely Noah and Ryan and Nathan. And actually, my good friend, Sarah, she is a professional editor as well. And so she's been helping with me as well.
What's the ETA on that? Do you know?
Very soon. I am getting the final edits from I still need it from Sarah. And then I'm going to do a final run through maybe next week. And then I'm just going to be done with it. Because you just have to, you just have to. Pull the pin, so to speak,
right.
and take the leap, and it'll never be perfect. And frankly, I don't care. You know, I'm going to self-publish, and if it's not perfect, it's not perfect. As a reader of other, you know, at Antioch as a professor, I read people's papers all the time, and you know, there are typos and there are, you know, little kind of weird areas. But as a reader, I'm mostly looking for, you know, what's the gestalt here? What do I walk away with?
Right.
And if the message is worthy, you know, all the other stuff is incidental. You know, I catch typos in legit published books sometimes.
Sure.
And, or weird sentences or weird structure, but I don't go like, ugh, you know, I don't throw the book across the room. I'm just like, well, you know, that's not how I would have done it. Right. Or maybe this was a little rushed. But if you make the point that it's not about the typos, it's about what is the message.
Yeah.
And the good feedback from people, particularly this latest draft, is people are saying, I'm getting the message loud and clear, and it's convincing, you know, that the state of supervision is not great and there needs to be something done. So, is that your impression of what?
Yeah, it's totally my impression. I've had many bad supervisors.
Yeah.
Some good ones. And for folks who are out there interested in becoming supervisors, Kirk's book is a very good reference. Totally worth your time.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
That's what I was hoping it would be, is to summarize, because a lot of the different supervision main literature out there, I mean, you have a lot of research, which it usually focuses on one particular thing, you know, and then you have the main supervision books out there, and they are... They're sort of textbooky, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
and they don't lay out actual best practices. You
right.
know, it's a lot of it's like stuff designed for a classroom, I suppose, but it's not designed for like, well, what do I do with that?
Right.
You know, and so this book provides all that. Plus, as a supervisor myself for almost 20 years now. I have a lot of stories and a lot of thoughts. And as a supervisee for 20 years, I have a lot of stories and a lot of thoughts, a lot of feelings. And it's not just so I provide all the academic and research pieces of it, but I also provide just this, all these like very, I don't know how to say it other than just heartfelt experiences about what supervision is exactly and the meaning of it.
Right.
And trying to make everyone more empathetic towards everybody is kind of the main point here, while also trying to be professionals about this whole thing. But anyway.
That's what's good about your book, though.
Oh, is it?
It's a balance between folks. There's a lot of research went into this book.
Yeah.
Kirk must have read everything.
I read, thousands of research articles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're all in there.
Yeah.
Referenced.
Yeah. Half the book is the reference chapter.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, but the thing is, though, that makes it dependable.
Yeah.
You know, you can read it and confidently
right.
accept the message that you get about what is good supervision and what are its facets.
Right. There's, you know, actual empiricism that right. has been going on for decades that you can call upon as a guide.
Yeah. It's not the Kirk Honda show of how to be a supervisor. It's really a very good companion, if that's something you're pursuing.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned so much. I mean, that's part of the reason why I wrote it, was as I was diving into writing it, I started to think, I didn't know that. and then I thought, well, maybe if I wrote about it, I could kind of It's almost like taking notes when you write, right? It's sort of, you internalize it. The more you write, like now, especially after revising this thing, this book I've memorized in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, even particular studies I've memorized because there's certain studies that are so. Anyway, welcome to the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor. Who are you, Bob?
My name's Bob Gettle. I'm a friend of Kirk's from graduate school way back when and a counselor here in Seattle.
Yeah. We met all the way back in 1995, back when I was, I don't know, probably 25, 30, probably 40 pounds lighter. I don't know.
you had longer hair.
You had
you had short hair back then.
I had a very cropped cut, but then I decided I wasn't going to ever cut my hair again. So by the end of graduate school, I had this very crazy, gross, long 90s hair. And you had a goatee, if I remember. You were so, it wasn't so bad. Have you ever had a beard?
Yeah, I had a beard right after grad school for about, I don't know, a year maybe.
I feel like you could rock a beard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this episode in which we talk about a case example is just for patrons of the podcast. So if you're listening to this, and you're not a patron of the podcast, this episode will end before the content begins. If you want to hear the full episode, you have to become a patron of the podcast by going to patreon.com. That's patreon.com. Go to Patreon and then just search for Psychology in Seattle and you'll find us. Become a patron and you'll get access to hundreds of patron-exclusive episodes in which we do deep dives into various topics, such as this case example. And remember that a portion of your monthly pledge goes towards various charities that we support.